Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. I'm Chad Young. This is usually when I tell you that I'm joined as always by Pete Ball, but Pete is away this weekend. And so we've got a special guest helping me out today. I'm joined today by Niv Shah. For those who don't know, Niv is the creator of Otternew. He runs Otternew. He is Otternew. Otternew exists solely by the grace of Niv Shah.
Oh man, all right.
So he is also a good friend of mine. I've known Niv since we were in high school. He is my co-manager in Otternew League 13, my competitor in Otternew League 1. But Niv, thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chad. I'm happy to be here. Try to fill in some heat.
Yeah, it's big shoes to fill.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, well, Pete had to fill in, had to replace me for a few weeks ago while I was out of town. So it's only fair that he gets a week off as well, I guess. But we're getting close to the end of the season here, and we're going to talk a little bit about how to manage your keeper teams for the stretch run and some decisions that you may need to make. We're going to do that through the eye of the team that I said Niv and I co-manage. We're going to look a little bit at, like, what are we doing with that team? How are we thinking about things? We've got some decisions to make, so we'll try to make those live on the show. But before we get to that, this is episode 114. That means we're looking at jersey number 14. And I warned Niv ahead of time that I was going to make a call out of this guy. But if you look at the leaders with the number 14, you know, Willie Mays wore it for one season, Ricky Henderson for one. But like Pete Rose and Ernie Banks really stand out as the guys who are sort of associated with that number who wore it the longest. However, those guys played for 19 years and 24 years. There's a guy who only got 11 years in the majors. Part of the reason he only got 11 years in the majors is because of things outside of his control, and it's Larry Doby. Larry Doby is the guy who broke the color barrier in the American League just shortly after Jackie Robinson did it in the National League. Doby is a guy who, my opinion, does not get nearly the credit and recognition he deserves. I think one of the things people forget when you watch baseball today is that, you know, in 47, when he broke the AL color barrier, the then Cleveland Indians were not going to the same stadiums that the then Brooklyn Dodgers were going to, which means that he was not following in Robinson's footsteps in any sort of literal way, right? Every time he went to a ballpark, he was the first black player to step foot on that field. Every time, right? Every time he faced a new fan base, he was the one who had to face, you know, we hear all the time about the vitriol and the challenges that Robinson faced, and like Doby did it all too. And he didn't do it. He did it second, kind of, but he didn't really do it second because nobody really went before him. Doby was also, I believe, the first black player to play in a World Series. He played on the 48 World Series team for Cleveland, the last win of a World Series for Cleveland. This makes me very sad. Niv and I, for those of you who don't know, we did go to high school in Cleveland. We are both Cleveland fans, and so, you know, not a fun topic. Satchel Paige was also on that team, but I believe Doby was on, like, started game one, and Paige I don't think did. So Doby would have been the guy to break that barrier. But yeah, so for me, if it's a number 14 episode, it's a Larry Doby episode. I've got a Larry Doby throwback 48 jersey that is my go-to Cleveland jersey when I go to Guardians games. So he's the guy who would get the credit for me. I'm still waiting for MLB to do what I think is the right thing and allow the Guardians have apparently asked multiple times to be allowed to wear number 14 on the anniversary of the day that Larry Doby broke the AL color barrier, and they've been told no. And that is just mind-boggling to me why MLB would make that decision. Like, doing it for Jackie Robinson has been so successful at raising visibility for what he went through and everything, and Doby deserves it. So I don't know. I don't know if anybody in the MLB offices is listening to this episode or cares what I think, but if you do, next year has another chance to right that wrong and to do more for Doby. This, you know, last year was the 75th anniversary. It would have been the perfect time to do it, but the 77th anniversary is still better than never. So
that's right.
So, Niv, anyone else you want to mention with number 14? I sort of took me out of the room with that.
Well, you nailed a bunch of the big names, and yeah, the Larry Doby stuff is obviously hard to follow. Totally agree with you about that stuff all the way down. I was just going through, and I'll just name someone really random on the list. I mean, I could call out a lot of these different players for different personal interests, but I was going through this list here and I found Ruben Sierra down here for the Blue Jays, which is a team that I don't remember him playing for at all. And Ruben Sierra played baseball probably when we were in middle school, elementary school, middle school, and probably retired towards when we were in high school together. So that guy, I just remember his swing as being like one of the, like, that guy was way ahead of his time because he was like pure power, had basically no batting average skill at all. And I just remember him being like very exciting as a young player because people are like, you know, he had that leg lift. He had like a really fun, like fast bat, and then just never was able to like get it together, you know, injuries and everything. But I'll mention him because that is just a completely random, I don't know if you had given me 10 guesses, I would have guessed that he played for the Blue Jays in 97, and apparently he wore number 14 that year. So
yeah, he played, part of the reason you can't remember that is he played all of 14 games.
Oh, that's a good number for that.
He also played 25 games for the Reds that year. That was one of the years that he dealt with injuries, clearly. Yeah, Sierra, sort of a...
Like when we're like in 89, he was second in the MVP. Like he was a great player for a little while.
Yes, and I had the same thought you did about him being a guy who like played when we were in, you know, middle school and into high school and then retired. He played for like 20 years. He came up in 1986 and retired in 2006.
That is a much longer window than I expected.
Yeah,
honestly,
totally unexpected. Yeah. He also only wore number 14 for one season. So just such a random guy to come up here, but
yeah, fun. I had to go random, Chad, cause you went with, you know, Larry Doby.
Fair enough.
So
fair enough.
Not going to try to follow that.
So with that, let's get into the topic for the week. And as I said, you know, we're getting into the stretch run, and that could mean playoffs for head-to-head leagues. It could mean the final month of the season for season-long leagues. It also could mean that you're, you know, out of it and just trying to figure out how to get yourself ready for next year. But we're going to start this off by talking a little bit about League 13, because I think it's a pretty good illustration of a number of things that other managers are probably dealing with right now. So Niv and I, League 13, it is an auto-new Fangraphs points head-to-head league. This is a league that, way back in February when we auctioned, I literally wrote an article about how badly we messed up the auction, how unhappy we sort of were with how things went. And in a league with, this is a league, there's three divisions, three division winners all make the playoffs, and there's three wild cards. We won our division. We also finished, we actually finished fourth in total points. No, I don't think we finished fourth in total. No, we did. We finished fourth in total points, which means we, even if we hadn't won our division, we still were going to be a playoff team, which is great. It's good to know that we were better than we thought. We now have a bye through the first round by virtue of having the second best record among the division winners, actually third best record overall. And so we're just waiting to see who we play next. But we're trying to figure out how to set our roster. And we're dealing with a couple of issues. And what I want to sort of do today is talk a little bit about how we're thinking about those issues, how that might help you think about similar issues in your teams. The two issues we're primarily dealing with here are, we are thin at middle infield. And that article, Niv, if you remember, the article I wrote back in February was like, we really should have gotten Xander Bogaerts and Francisco Lindor.
Right.
And here we are in September, and we still haven't really solved our middle infield issues. So
one of the reasons that we went in with that strategy is because it's hard to solve middle infield after the initial draft or the initial auction. And that has proven to be true. Like we've struggled with it pretty much all year, right? Like we've been.
Yeah. No, we've had, we have a pretty good starting middle infield. So we have Spencer Steer, Itzhak Paredes, and Nico Horner. All three of them have been very good. The other two major league middle infielders on our roster are Michael Massey and Geraldo Perdomo, who have been... Perdomo started off pretty well, which is why we picked him up when we did, but he's been very bad lately. Massey has, you know, had moments this year, but that's about it. We also had a $12 Vaughn Grissom that I feel like all season I was like, at some point, Grissom's going to help us out a lot.
Right.
And Atlanta has just...
Vaughn Grissom is like a great place for us to start this conversation because even a week ago before the trade deadline, Von Grissom had, even a $12 Von Grissom had some sort of value, and the Braves never brought him up, and which, you know, it is what it is. Atlanta is doing fine, so they have to make the right decisions. It's not like Atlanta's sitting here without a chance of the playoffs or whatever. They're like the best team in baseball. But that value has changed so much over the course of the year that we went from, this is a really great piece for our team, to, I guess he's the first guy out the door. Like, I don't know, like, what, as we're trying to resituate for the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Like, when we were looking at the trade deadline, we were getting, I wouldn't say like strong interest in him per se, but there were people who were like, oh, I could sort of see kicking the tires on Von Grissom. And then everyone was like, eh, at $12, like we reached a point where a $12 Grissom would be $14 next year. A week ago, a month ago, it felt like there was a chance he could still be worth that. And as a keeper for next year, because, I mean, keep in mind, Grissom in AAA this year, and it's not like he's old. He's 22.
Right.
Right. So he's still, he'll be 23 in January. He's still a perfectly reasonable age for AAA.
For how much he's matching AAA.
And he's at 7.43 points per game in AAA. For those of you who don't play Auto New and are looking at him for other formats, that is a 135 WRC plus. He's crushing AAA as a middle infielder, right? He has shortstop and second base eligibility. I think he is lined up. Yes, he is lined up to keep both shortstop and second base next year. He has been up, I think, twice or maybe three times for Atlanta this year. As recently as 2 weeks ago, he was on their roster. And this is when we're getting trade interest in him, was he was up and they weren't playing. Like between, right. He played one game on the August 19th, one on the 20th. But those were one plate appearance apiece. He went 0-for-1. Then he got two starts in 3 days, the 21st and the 23rd. And he went 3-for-8. He had a double and a triple in those eight plate appearances, right? So single, a double, a triple, and 8 plate appearances, and then went back down, and that was it. And so it's like, it's very clear that Atlanta's just not going to give him a shot this year. Maybe ever. Like, I don't know if they shop him this offseason. I don't know what the situation is with him, but like, they clearly are not willing to give him a shot. And at that point, it's like, I think where we're getting trade interest is he had those two really good games, and you think, okay, if he takes over as you know, a middle infielder on the team, the shortstop, right? Because he's not replacing Albies. But if he takes over at shortstop the rest of the way, or even plays as utility guy the rest of the way and plays 4, 5, 6 out of every 7 games and puts up the kind of numbers we think he can put up offensively, then you could keep him for $14 next year, expecting him to be a close to full-time player and putting up the kind of stats he's capable of. The fact that they sent him down again, it was just like, you can't keep him. There's no way you could keep him at $14 because he hasn't had a chance to show what he can do. And so like his roster percentage, I mean, it's interesting. You look, you know, Auto New has this great feature that shows you a player's change in their roster percentage over the last 7 and last 30 days. Over the last 30 days, his roster percentage is up 4.17%. Over the last 7 days, it's down 4.48%. It's down to about 71.2%. And it's going to drop as the season goes on. And I think what you're seeing is over the last month, there was some hope that he would really establish himself as part of the future in Atlanta. And instead, he's sort of done the opposite just because they won't give him the time of day.
Or at least the present, right? It doesn't seem like he's going to play ahead of, like, they're just not going to get rid of Orlando Arcia or whoever they're playing it short right now.
Arcia, and I think Nicky Lopez is still getting some time as well.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so I feel like he's a pretty interesting case. Like, we tried to get younger and cheaper in the offseason. We traded Mookie Betts for Von Grissom back in January. That was ahead of our draft and everything. And obviously ahead of Betts gaining shortstop and becoming like whatever he's become. So I feel like, you know, we had a vision for Von Grissom that just has not aligned with how the Braves want to use him. And I think he's going to be a great $6 pickup in the auction for someone next year. But he has just completely changed. And again, as we're situating for our stretch run in head-to-head in Auto New, we don't have game caps. So you really want to be able to have depth such that each lineup spot is filled every day. It's not going to be necessarily the best player every day, but there's no reason not to play players in points formats in head-to-head, right? So we need someone who's going to play. And one of the things Chad and I were talking about a little bit is, you know, we have 40-man rosters in Auto New, and how many of those rosters need to be productive roster spots? But then also at the same time, how many players do we need in each position? And when you're looking ahead to our playoff matchup next week, regardless of who we play, we are, I think, next Thursday stuck without a third middle infielder, right?
Yeah, I think we have, I'm trying to think, I think we do have an option. And this is part of the debate we were having was, so next Monday, we have, you know, like I said, we've got Paredes, Horner, and Steer as our starters. On Monday, the 11th, two of those guys play, but I think it's Steer who has the day off. And I'm just pulling it up right now. Yes, Steer has a day off. However, Michael Massey's playing that day. He is playing in Chicago at Guaranteed Rate Field, or whatever they call it. And while Massey has not been good, he has the ability to run into a ball every once in a while. And he's facing, as of right now, lined up to face Dylan Cease, who hasn't been very good, in a very power-friendly park. And so there's, you know, you can look at that and be like, okay, yeah, we could maybe see who's available as a free agent. But like, if we have to slot Massey in there and take a shot that he's going to hit one out, there's worse bets to take.
Certainly.
But if I look ahead to Thursday the 14th, on that day, Steer is back because, you know, he was off Monday, so he's not off Thursday, but Horner is out. And Massey is not playing. And Geraldo Perdomo is lined up to face the Mets in New York. Like, that's not nearly as sort of intriguing a bet to take. And so you start to look at, like, okay, well, who's out there as free agents? And this is where things get ugly. So if I look at, see if I can pull this up real quick. If I look at middle infielders who are, I'm going to start not even by worrying about free agents in this league, because I want to look more generally to things that might help others as well. I look at middle infielders who are less than 75% rostered, and ideally, let's see if I get this working, and have had more than 50 plate appearances this year, just so I can, you know, reasonable sample size of they've played. If I look at that audience and I sort by points per game, the best middle infielder who is less than 75% rostered, has 50 plate appearances this year, is DJ LeMahieu at 4.24 points per game, which is only barely better than what Perdomo's been doing. Now, LeMahieu's been good lately, and the next guy on this list, Luis Ranjifo, has also been good lately. And so if you're in a league where you need a middle infielder, like, those two guys are as good a bet as any. They both qualify at multiple positions. Ranjifo is both second and short, as well as third and outfield. LeMahieu first, second, and third. They've been good lately. But for this league, neither of those guys are available. The next two guys aren't available. There's literally one player who is a free agent and under 70% rostered. It's a little bit of a weird way to look at it, but there's one guy who's a free agent on this list who is over 4 points per game this year in 50 plus plate appearances, and that is Donovan Solano. And so we're sort of in a spot where, like, I just don't know. Yeah. I don't know who we go out and pick up, because there just aren't good options.
Right. And the mere fact that we're spending $12, like a percentage of our, a meaningful percentage of our available cap, on a guy who didn't make expanded rosters for the Braves.
Right.
I mean, it's just brutal. We got burned on that sort of bet over the course of the year. But yeah, we have to look, and we have to believe that we can beat Perdomo, beat an outing from Perdomo. And the way these games play, like, four at-bats matter. Like, it's crazy. Like, in a week, like, four at-bats can really make a difference between winning handily and having, like, a tight race or losing.
Yeah. Now, the challenge, though, also is, and this is where, you know, we started talking earlier about how you use your 40 roster spots. And that's become a really popular topic in AutoNew over the last couple years with the introduction of the AutoNew Prestige League. For those of you who don't know, that's sort of it's a best ball competition that takes place over the course of the season. You enter a team and it's an entry separate from the league you're already in. I would suggest looking up the AutoNew Prestige League to get more information, because we're not going to dive deep on that right now. But in a best ball format, using every spot on your roster really matters, because the reality is, like, using Solano, since he's a free agent, versus Perdomo. If you had those two guys in your roster, like, who is going to be better on any given day is hard to know, but every day one of them will be better than the other. And there's a good chance that fairly often one of them will be better than our starters, right? There will be a lot of days where one of those guys outperforms Steer, Paredes, and or Horner. However, there are very, very few days on which I'm going to bet on one of them doing that, which means that you're going to be starting the other guys anyways. And so we're really looking at, you know, that one game next Thursday. And maybe there's a day, maybe Steer gets a day off, maybe Paredes gets a day off, maybe Horner gets a day off, right? Like, you never know when you might need someone to slot in. But even when that happens, you have to balance how you use that roster spot with how strongly you believe Solano, or looking at the other free agents here, like Mauricio Dubon, Ahmed Rosario, Chris Taylor, Taylor Walls, like, how strongly do we feel that those guys are a better bet for a single game to be better than Perdomo? And I don't know. It's all sort of a difficult choice to make. And I don't really see a lot of other names I'm excited about.
One of the things that's interesting is just that this feels like it's at the margins, but, like, again, I'm going back to this point. It just seems like a really marginal decision that in a 1 week playoff head-to-head game can swing the week.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that makes the playoffs, like, I think, both horrific and also excellent, right? Like, it's a really high variance thing. You know, it's just like Major League Baseball playoffs. You just want to get in the door. Having fewer games is better because it's less chances of getting eliminated, basically. But it's a high variance game. And the question that we were sort of grappling with earlier, Chad, right, when we were talking, is, on one hand, we do want to we have isolated a couple days where we need to think about middle infield depth because of how the schedule plays out the week that we're looking. So we spent 30 minutes. We look at the schedule ahead. We're like, where are there going to be gaps where we don't have as many players as we do in other positions? We have good outfield. We have util and first base covered really well. So then we start having a conversation of, like, okay, well, do we want to take three different bets at middle infield, or do we want to start looking at players that, you know, we also have the strategy aspect of having a lot of money. So do we want to start looking at players that we may want to add, looking a little bit more ahead for assets in the off season or even pieces for next year, which is a crazy thing to think about in AutoNew and or in general in fantasy in September, because you're either in the playoffs or you're not, and that sort of makes the decision for you on if you should be thinking ahead or thinking about today. But we happen to be in the playoffs in what I think is a relatively strong position, given what Chad outlined earlier, but we also have a good amount of money. And so we're sort of trying to figure out a balance there. Chad just mentioned some of the free agents. Not a whole lot to be inspired by in middle infield. Probably going to have to take a bet on one of them. But is it a place where we want to take a bet on two or three and clear up some of the guys, like some injured relief pitchers and other guys that we're just not going to run out there, like Vaughn Grissom? Or do we start looking at guys like Dylan Cruz that are just now going up for auction now that people are eliminated from the regular season in our league?
Yeah, so let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to pivot and talk a little bit about that future-focused decision-making. Because I think there's some interesting debates to have around that. All right, welcome back. So as we were going to break, Niv mentioned, you know, this question of like, should we be looking at Dylan Cruz? And Cruz is up for auction now. He never went up for auction previously in this league. He has, you know, he sort of tore through A ball and is now in Double A, where he's been struggling for all of 10 games. And, you know, I'm not super worried about him. He is an elite prospect from everything I can see. But we have this interesting debate of, like, do we want to go after Dylan Cruz? And no, obviously, Dylan Cruz not going to help us this year. I think we can all be confident that that's the case. Like, do we go after him? Or do we want to go after a guy like, it's like we talked about Donovan Solano as an option. The guy that I sort of noticed only because the Giants go to Coors is Brandon Crawford as a free agent. Do you take a bet on Crawford that one day that we know we need him next Thursday, he has a game at Coors that he's almost assuredly going to start? Is that a better bet to make? And I think we're going sort of back and forth on what's the best use of a handful of dollars right now. Is it, you know, is it trying to get whatever the marginal difference is between starting Crawford and starting Perdomo next Thursday? Or is it trying to grab a guy like Cruz and have him ready for next year?
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're going back and forth about that today, and I think it's sort of like perfectly encapsulates what we wanted to talk about today, because it's September and you just really have to start thinking about in both these ways. And one of the things Chad said to me that was funny but is, like, you know, really worth saying explicitly is, Chad said, Niv, I want to win this year. And, like, that's really worth saying explicitly, right?
I do want to win this
year. Of course. I want to win. And I think our team is in a position that it could win. Like, I don't think our team is wishful thinking when we look at things that way. And, you know, we had some conversations with other people in League 13 in the Fangraphs Staff League that were in playoff position that did not feel the same kind of confidence or the same kind of, like, didn't feel that their team was capable of winning, is, I guess, the best way of saying it, right? And I don't know if, like, that's a whole other question, and that's where you have to be honest with yourself. And I think Chad and I have talked about that in multiple conversations. You have to really be plain about it. I think if you're in playoff position in a head-to-head league, there's very few players that are going to be better than going in with what you got that got you into that position. But at the same time, like, I get it. You know, if you feel like my team barely squeaked into the playoffs, maybe you start changing your resource allocation towards what helps you in December and January trade talks, what helps you in April of next year. For us, I think the only difference is we have money, and having a winning team with still having, like, a good 10% of our cap free is a really weird place to be in. It's not really expected, but it's also a huge benefit, right? So for me, I think we should take advantage of that. I think if you're talking about a guy like Donovan Solano or, who you say, Crawford, right? Those guys are, like, not going to be more than $3 or $4 in our league unless somebody is listening to this podcast and starts pumping up bids just because of what we're talking about. But a guy like Cruz or Paul Skeens or Wyatt Langford or any of the other, like, really promising guys from the draft, or even other top 50 prospects that are available in our league because of the way head-to-head plays, those guys are going to be a little bit pricier to get. And from my perspective, since we do have the most money free, I would just like to make sure that those guys, whoever they go to, have to cost a premium. Because, like, a guy like Cruz, he could be with a major league club next year. Skeens might even pitch a week this year. Like, Skeens,
well, they just shut him down. They just shut Skeens down for the season, yeah.
Because they were, like, you know, people were talking about, like, it could be a useful bullpen arm. But if they're shutting him down now, which makes sense given the workload that he's faced this year, he could be in the mix at very early next year, right?
Yeah,
for, like, sure. These aren't guys that are 2 years away, 3 years away, and they seem to be even less speculative than Vaughn Grissom, who went for $12 in our league, right? Like, Vaughn Grissom isn't $12 by mistake. Vaughn Grissom was the market value. That was the market value for Vaughn Grissom in the offseason. So for me, I would like to see us use that money at least to push those prices into a premium place so that people don't feel like they have massive surplus value with a guy like Cruz who starts playing outfield for the Nats in May next year. At the same time, I want to win. So how do you balance those?
Yeah. And I think that's the challenge. We're going to have to sort of wrestle with it. It's going to be an ongoing thing. I think right now, I think what we're looking at this precise moment is the options for us at middle infield are just not exciting. There just aren't good options out there. And the reality is, if we're going to go with a bad option, we've got bad options on our roster already. We don't need to go out and acquire a bad option. And so with roster spots that we have free, and we don't technically have a free roster spot right now, but we have guys like Seth Brown has not been good and is basically never in our lineup. Grissom, as we talked about, like, he doesn't need to stick around anymore. We have Jojo Romero, who's now on the IL. I'm sort of waiting for an update to figure out how long he's going to be out, because he's been a really good reliever, but if he's hurt and he's not going to help us in the playoffs, I don't need to sit on him. We've got some guys that we could cut loose. And those guys we can cut loose, right now, we don't really have a big need other than maybe another starting pitcher. We made a trade late in the season, right at the trade deadline, for Julio Urias, who now appears to be done for the year, I guess. It's hard to know exactly what's going to happen, but
not traveling with the team anymore. So,
right. So I think we're likely to be able to cut him, but that also means we need to find a way to fill those innings. But right now we don't have any huge needs. And so making those cuts to use them for a guy like Cruz or some other prospects, I want to talk about some other prospect names in a minute as well, I think makes a lot of sense. But the other advantage that cash gives us is, especially in head-to-head leagues where you've got these direct matchups, there's going to be moments over the next couple of weeks and hopefully, through the finals for us, where we need a starting pitcher. We're short a starter. We need somebody who's starting over the weekend in order to hit our 9 games started. And using that money to make like a $20 bid or something crazy on a starting pitcher who has the best option for us on a Saturday could be worth it, because you need to find a way to fill those starts. That money could also be really useful to do something like block another team who needs a starting pitcher, right? If we find out that our opponent is, one start short this week, any starting pitcher I see go up for auction, I'm putting a big bid on, and we're doing what we can to stop them or force them to make an aggressive bid at the very least and make an aggressive cut to get that player onto their team. So there are times we're going to have to use that money. And the reality is, like, let's say we bid on Cruz now, we get him whatever price, $6, $7, $8. We may find ourselves a week from now cutting him, because a week from now, it may be that the trade-off of going to get some piece to help us win now is better than it is today. Because right now, the trade-off of going to get any of these middle infield guys is just, it's not worth it. I'd rather get Cruz. Now, speaking of Cruz, this league, Skeens also a free agent. Wyatt Langford also a free agent. But in a lot of leagues, it's not true. A lot of leagues, the top prospects have been sort
of
cleaned up.
They go right away after they're signed, yeah.
Yeah. And when these guys went up for auction, when Cruz specifically went up for auction, Niv, you commented to me like, oh, I can't believe this guy's available. There really aren't any top prospects available. And I was like, I don't know. I think there are some other top prospects out there. And I think one of the reasons for that is there's so many prospect lists out there. There's millions of them. At this point in the season, anybody who is looking, if you're out of it, right? Actually, I shouldn't just say if you're out of it. If you're either not contending and looking to build for next year, or if you're just a team with some roster spots to play with and you want to start to think about next year, go out and find updated prospect lists. And what I mean by that is, like, the list I've been mostly using over the last few days is Eric Cross of Fantasy Toolshed. He's got a Patreon. I can't remember what his Patreon is. I'll look it up while I'm talking. But Eric Cross put out a top 500 Yes, top 500 prospect list on his Toolshed, on his Patreon, which is Toolshed Fantasy is the Patreon. So that's why I'm getting confused here. That is, that's a lot of prospects to list. It is more prospects than you need for not a new league. It is honestly more prospects than you need for most leagues. There are not that many leagues that you really need to go 500 prospects deep, but it is super awesome to have that list. It is also, I believe, a fantasy focused list, right? So this isn't your, like, you know, I've cited Baseball Prospectus's list before. The board over at Fangraphs comes up a lot. Those are not necessarily fantasy specific, which means that they focus on things like how good a defender someone is that we maybe don't care about necessarily, right? We only care about it so far as it impacts what position the guy plays.
Right.
But if you go pull up this list, and I don't want to, Eric sells his content, and so I don't want to like give away his content, but like there are some names near the top of his list that I have not seen near the top of a lot of other lists. And I'll give you one example, and that's Adael Amador, who's a shortstop in the Rockies system. He is, I think he's only like 19 years old. He is in AA, and the Rockies have recently shown with Tovar that they will promote their kids. They were, there's that whole period of time where it felt like Rockies prospects were just all blocked. They were never getting called up. Like, why would you call up a prospect when you could sign a 40-year-old?
They really reversed their philosophy there in like the most 180-degree way, it seems.
Yeah. But if they're willing to call up Tovar to start this year, I don't think it's that hard to imagine that Amador could be up at some point next year. Not to start the season. I mean, at this point, he has 18 plate appearances. Like literally just 18 plate appearances at AA. There have been very good plate appearances, but it's still just 18 plate appearances. But he has fairly consistently walked more than he has struck out in the minors. He flashes, I don't know if I would say good power, but good enough power. At Fangraphs, they give him a 40 power, 30 game power,
middle infield,
70 potential hit tool. Yeah, yeah.
Middle infield power, right? I mean, it was the same thing we're talking about with Vaughn Grissom earlier. It's good. It's good numbers for your middle infield slot.
Right. But I think a couple of things have changed with Amador in the last few months. One of those is he's up to 12 home runs in about 63 games this year. That is a pretty good power bat, right? You're talking about a guy who's now flashing 25-ish home run pace in the minors, right? Spread across three levels in the minors, mostly high A. But still, you're looking at 20 to 30 home run power over the course of a season instead of what I think a lot of people thought was more like 15 to 20 home run power. And so that's a meaningful change.
It's also part of the age curve, just real quick, Chad. Like he's 20 and he's on his age 20 year, right? He's 19 turning 20. Dylan Cruz is older than that. Wyatt Langford's older than that. These are guys, like, you have guys who have, like, who are closer to what their body type will look like in the majors, and you have guys who are international players who maybe have some, who are just younger and have more physical development still to do. So showing that kind of power, even at those levels, and again, middle infielder, showing that kind of power at the age 20 season, there's a lot of things to like about that.
Right. Exactly. The other thing is that he played all of 54 games in high A, and then the Rockies moved him up to double A. And so he's flashing this better power. He's continuing to show really good plate discipline. And now the Rockies are signaling that they're willing to move quickly with him like they did with Tovar. And so to me, his prospect star is very, very much on the rise. And so I've been trying to grab him where I can. And the reason, part of what I'm seeing with a guy like Amador right now is I think that in the off season, when a lot of these less responsive lists get updated, right? You don't have, not everybody is doing what Eric's doing and sort of regularly updating, but like I've picked up a couple shares of this guy already, and I sort of think I'm going to try to grab a few more before the season's over, because I think that in December, January, February, as these lists come out, his value is going to be up, and up potentially a lot. And so now to me is the time to go out and get him. And I think you can do that if you look at these lists. Another guy who I've seen popping up more and more on lists is Chase DeLauder. He's a Cleveland prospect, and he's had some injury issues that have slowed him down. But honestly, like the way he's hitting right now, he should be up for Cleveland next year, not to start the season, but at some point next year. And again, because he started the year hurt, because he didn't have a long track record, and because a lot of the lists are, I think, outdated on him, his value is probably lower than it should be. I don't think he's viewed as a universal top 50 prospect, and I think he is that good. And so out there, find lists that have been updated and take advantage of that.
To your point too, it's really, you know, it's the same kind of thinking, and you know, just not to beat this thing to death, but we thought Vaughn Grissom would be this kind of guy, but you have to think about it in terms of your fantasy team of, you don't really want to be holding a guy for 2 years. You don't want to be waiting for 2-3 years and like absorbing all that risk and absorbing all those market fluctuations to him, right? Like, that's the challenge. And so then when we're looking at, say, maybe Chad and I go back and forth in League 13 and we say we have three and a half roster spots to play with, when we start naming guys that we'd like to cut and guys we'd like to replace, and we're like, well, we'd like to see one more reliever on the team, and we'd really like to get a middle infielder, so we probably have one good prospect spot there. Given our money situation, maybe we go for someone flashy like Dylan Cruz, but given the overall like view, and you know, like Chad said, if we grab someone like Cruz and he ends up costing $12, he might be right back in the pool in 2 weeks just because we need to make a blocking move. If we can get someone else on that list, or someone else on like one of these more updated lists that is compelling for $2 or $3, that's someone that is more likely to be held even while we make other kinds of blocking moves, you know. And you know, Chad and I used to play a lot of poker. This is definitely what you do when you have the big stack at the table. You make sure everyone pays a little bit of a tax on this. And so if we're stuck, you know, with holding the winning bid on someone that we don't necessarily want, a starting pitcher we don't really need, just because we're trying to block them from our opponent, we have to like consider all these different moving pieces as we're going. And one of the benefits of, or one of the things that might be beneficial for us, is to find someone that's more like a $2 or $3 prospect instead of someone that's going to be, you know, a $10 prospect who just hit 12 home runs in a week in Omaha or whatever, you know. So it's like just getting a little bit under the radar there might be really valuable to us.
Yeah. And I think you're right that those cheaper guys, like that's where you get long-term value or potential long-term value. And that's why I really like these updated lists, because I think if you can get a guy for $2 or $3 now, and then by January, some lists have been updated and people are like, oh, this guy's a top 15 prospect, I should have paid $8 for him, but I didn't. Then you get some decisions to make. Do I trade him? Do we cash him in via trade? Do we hold him? But like, you've got a piece on your team that is low price and high value, and that's what you're looking for. And so
there's also one of these things where, since we're obviously a competitive team, if you're not competitive, you may want to just get someone at market value that is immediately impactful, like a Dylan Cruz or Wyatt Langford, someone that's big name, well-known, and a clear path to the majors. A high upside, low-cost prospect fits in better with maybe trying to make the final piece trade next year, or hopefully building a repeat team, that which is our goal, right? So it's just a question of figuring out how your team can manage with those pieces. Dylan Cruz is probably worth less to us than a team that's not in the playoffs right now, but the kinds of prospects that Jad's talking about are probably worth the same to everyone in our league, which means that since we're, you know, sitting here with a big pile of money and a competitive team, we have a better chance of getting those cheaper guys.
Yeah. So we're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, we're going to start talking about some guys who are under, let's call it 70% rostered, 75% rostered, something like that, and I don't know, who are intriguing either because of what they could do for you right now or because of what they might be able to do for you in the future. All right, welcome back. As mentioned, we're going to start to dive into some players you should be looking at. And we're going to try to look at both guys who are interesting for right now, who might be able to help you win a championship by, you know, getting you a few more at-bats in the outfield, getting you a few more innings pitched, wherever it is. But also players who, if you're either not contending or, as Niv and I have been talking about with our team in League 13, if you're looking to balance the present day and the future, guys who, whether or not they help you today, may have some long-term value. And Niv, I'll start with you. Are there any guys you want to, anyone you want to start with, anyone you think is particularly interesting who's out there?
Yeah, I want to talk about a guy that you and I have debated a little bit at length about. You know, he's been on our cut section of the roster organizer, and he's been right in our rotation. He's been on the bullpen, and that's Nick Pivetta, who is in auto new roster right around 66%, 66.3. He is an uninspiring starting pitcher. He is a dime a dozen starting pitcher. He's available. He's a replacement level starting pitcher in auto new. He's not starting, though. He's relieving. He's coming in as a bulk follower and getting those points out of the bullpen in some sort of predictable fashion, especially in auto new, is just absolutely valuable and absolutely could be an entire matchup changer, like not just a single day, but can flip an entire matchup. And Chad and I have been talking about him because you look at his overall numbers and you're like, this guy is frustrating, but you understand what the Red Sox are doing, which is like, he's a guy where you don't have to face the top three or four hitters on the other team. And he gets to come in and maybe do a second time through the order with that lineup, with whatever lineup they're facing, and gets four innings in. You know he's going to pitch, which is a huge value for a follower, right, out of your relievers. Otherwise, you're just sort of beholden to managerial decisions. And we've held on to him despite multiple times sort of being like, man, we could use that roster spot. And the reason we've held on to him is just he can flip a head-to-head game. So it is a little specific to auto new head-to-head or auto new fantasy points, but I think Nick Pivetta is a guy that we got to, you know, acknowledge at least.
Yeah, and it's not just head-to-head points. It's really any format, whether it's auto new or elsewhere, where starts are limited in some ways, but innings matter, if that makes sense. And so what makes him such a good fit for us in this head-to-head league is we get 9 starts per week, right? We have 5 relief pitcher spots, 5 starting pitcher spots, just like any auto new league, but we can only start 9 pitchers over the course of the week. And Pivetta, I mean, his last 10 appearances, he's made 3 starts. And of those 3 starts, only one has been particularly good for our league. He had a 36.2-point start back on July 25th. A 36.67-point start on July 31st. The 25th was a relief appearance. And that was great. Then he made consecutive starts on August 9th and August 15th. The one on August 9th was 12 points. The one on the 15th was 24.07. 24.07 isn't a bad start. It's not great, but it's not bad. You'll take that.
Yeah.
And I'm specifically mentioning points and not points per inning because with a 9 start cap, I don't care if my starting pitcher gives me 30 points over 9 innings or 30 points over 4 innings. 30 points is 30 points. And so if you play in, like, I play in a, it's actually not even a head-to-head league. It is a roto league, a roto keeper league. It's one of the Fangraphs, no, so one of the keeper cut listener leagues, where I am trying to make up ground in innings pitched, which is a category, and in strikeouts. Pivetta doesn't necessarily have to be great for me to be more useful than a reliever, because I can slot him into a relief pitcher spot and he will get me more innings and likely more strikeouts than a relief pitcher will in that same spot. And it doesn't matter if they're high quality innings or not. And that's the same thing we're looking at here. We're like, you know, his last 4 appearances for have been out of the bullpen. We've gotten all of these on our head-to-head team that you know, was making its drive for the playoffs over that stretch. And in those 4 appearances, he went 5 innings and got 17.6 points. That's a pretty bad point-per-inning pitch. It's terrible for a reliever, but it doesn't matter because for a single relief outing, that's great. He went 2/3 of an inning in his next one and got 5.93 points. It was actually pretty good on a points per inning pitch basis, but only okay on a total points basis, even for one relief appearance. Then he went 2 innings and got 4.4 points. And again, that's really bad on a point per inning pitch basis, right? That's a poor appearance for Rahmat. He went 2 innings, gave up 4 runs, 4 hits, walked 2, had 3 strikeouts. But for us, he got us 4.4 points that we otherwise wouldn't have had. And so it's fine. It's not great. It doesn't help a ton, but it helps. And then he went 3 innings, 19.7 points. That's just a good outing no matter what. But it'd be really bad for us as a start, because 19.7 points over 3 innings is not as good as even 20 points over 6 innings from a starter in that format. So this is a case where knowing your format, understanding the rules, but if you're in a situation where you're limited in the number of starting pitchers you can use and volume from your pitching matters, Pivetta is a really, really useful piece who I think is undervalued right now. And like, even in Otto New, his roster percentage is down almost 10% over the last 30 days, down almost 5% over the last 7 days. Like, people are bailing on him. And so he is available. And if you can go get him, again, in those formats where that volume out of your bullpen can be useful, I would go get him. I really like that. That's a good call out. Another name that I'll mention, since we're talking pitchers, I'm going to throw out a couple of pitchers who I think are probably more future value, but are kind of interesting short term. One of them is Jordan Wicks, who is recently called up by the Cubs. He's made 2 starts. He's put up 55 points in 10 innings. That's pretty. His 2 starts have both been, he had a very good first start and a solid second start. We'll see where it goes from here. He's got a start, it looks like, against the Giants coming up next. That should be a pretty favorable matchup for him. And Wicks is, you know, his minor league numbers are not super inspiring. He is not a top prospect, right? He's not a guy who's going to be a game changer for you. He had a 4.22 FIP in AAA, right? But he looks kind of solid. Like, he is not going to be your next ace, but could he be a mid-rotation kind of guy? I think he might be able to. He's getting decent strikeout numbers. The walks are high, but not too bad. He runs pretty solid ground ball rates. He hasn't really run those high ground ball rates in his couple of major league starts, but in AAA this year, he had a 47.2% ground ball rate. His last time in AAA, or his last stop in AA, it was 40.4%, but before that, 47.8%. 45.5%. It's like, he's consistently run pretty good ground ball rates. Like, that's all valuable and all useful. I think he's a really interesting bet. If you are in need of innings right now, he might be able to help you out. But I think the bigger interest for him, for me in keeper leagues, is like, does he make 3, 4, 5 good starts down the stretch, establish himself as a piece of this rotation for the future, and become a keeper for you? And I think there's a possibility in your deeper keeper formats, in an auto new, in a league where you're keeping 9, 10, 12 type guys, that could happen. The other pitcher I want to talk about real quick, and then Niv, I'll let you react to these. And this is one I think is just sort of almost a fun story as much as anything else, but TJ Antone. He was like the hot thing for the Reds 3 years ago, made 13 appearances, very strong appearances in 2020. Made 23 relief appearances and was good in 2021, has dealt with injury issues nonstop, has not pitched since 2021, came back this year, has thrown 13 minor league innings that were okay, but then came up and has made 2 appearances on September 2nd, just a couple days ago, a few days ago. He went 1 inning out of the bullpen, 6.8 points. That's pretty solid. 3 batters, had a strikeout and a hit allowed. Like, that's a solid appearance. Then came out as a starter, really as sort of an opener. Went 2 innings, 6 up, 6 down, 3 strikeouts. Antone has talent. We know he has talent. The question's been his ability to stay on the field. It'll be very interesting to see how the Reds use him. It is unclear to me if he is going to be an opener consistently, at least for now. And then what that will mean for next year. So, you know, Antone is not a guy that I think we're going to consider at all in our head-to-head league, because I don't know how they're going to use him. And if he continues to be used as an opener, openers have very low value in head-to-head auto new leagues because you're limited in the number of starts you have, and a short start just isn't that useful. But I'm interested in him in other areas where, you know, maybe you can pick him up and he works his way back into that rotation for next year. And, you know, we'll see how they use him. We'll see what they do with him. But he is an interesting, talented arm. And given all he's gone through, I'm hoping for good things for him.
Yeah, it's a great vibes pick. The Reds' pitching has been decimated with injuries. It has been just a complete disaster coming down the stretch here. Obviously a very exciting team from an offensive perspective and really fun players. And they actually had fun pitching prospects too. But I think TJ Anton is a really neat shout because I think the Reds are going to use, they just need arms. And so they're going to be creative about how they use these guys. Keep an eye on them. Anyone who's healthy in the Reds, like pitching set of players, I think they called up a prospect for today. Like they're trying a lot of things right now. And it's just because they don't have healthy players right now. A lot of guys have been hurt, unfortunately. So TJ Anton will get a fair shake this month. Definitely worth looking at. When I look at Jordan Wicks, just to go back to him real quick, I see a dude who is 24, but he only just turned 24. He is a college pitcher who has always had good strikeout rates. He was never a top prospect, but he also was in college in 2021 and kind of bounced around in 2022. Like, he just hasn't. It's a question of how much he's had a chance to establish himself to be on prospect lists sometimes with these guys. But strikeout rate has always been there. Ground ball rate, like you said, Chad, has always been there. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's just sort of one of these guys that all of a sudden, without really building up a prospect pedigree, which college pitchers can sort of skip that step sometimes. Mm-hmm. Having a college pitcher that can strike people out in the majors, you can sometimes skip that part where you're the 60th prospect and then the 35th best prospect. You're just all of a sudden a major league pitcher. And Jordan Wicks could follow that mold. And again, like when I look at guys like that, when I'm looking at low roster guys that I'm just sort of looking for upside, strikeout rate is a go-to for me in a big way. And obviously ground ball rate, keeping the ball in the field or in the park, are the two like most important things. So totally feel you on those picks. I like them.
Any other pitchers you wanted to talk about?
For me, I think, you know, those are all really good shouts. There's no one else that I'm like super in love with. The way I think about pitching generally in auto new, especially, it's hard to find pitchers that aren't popular. Yeah. Once someone's a little effective, he will be sniffed out. So for me, for pitching, I don't really have anyone else now.
Yeah. The one other guy that I think is worth mentioning and is Javier Assad with the Cubs, who I mean, it's a little bit of a weird one. Like he's at 4.48 points per inning this year, which, given that he's made 18 relief appearances and only 7 starts, is a pretty bad number. He is still only about 27% rostered, which that number, you know, matches to. However, since he's moved to the rotation on August 5th, he had a very weak start against Atlanta, but like it was against Atlanta. Then he had a 42.4 inning or point start. That'd be a crazy inning start. 42.4 point start over 7 innings at Toronto, 23.7 over 6 innings, which is still solid-ish against the White Sox. Then he had another bad start, gave up a couple home runs against Detroit, 5.1 innings, 3.87 points. His last two starts, he has gone a combined 15 innings. He struck out 14 hitters. He's walked 3. He has not allowed a home run. He's allowed 1 earned run on 10 hits, and he's put up 104 points over those 15 innings. He has been absolutely incredible over those two starts, including, as I mentioned, 14 strikeouts over 15 innings, which is important because his ability to get those strikeouts is where he is going to be able to pull in points. And he really hasn't had big strikeout numbers this year. He's striking out 6.93 guys per 9 inning, a 19.3% strikeout rate. Again, he's made most of his appearances out of the bullpen. And so that kind of a strikeout rate when you're getting a guy who's mostly been out of the bullpen is concerning. But last two starts, he started to show maybe something a little more with those strikeouts. And I think as good as he's been over those two starts, he's at least worth taking a look at. Now, it is worth noting that over that six start stretch that I just read through, let's ignore the Atlanta start because no one was starting him against Atlanta anyways. But so over these last five starts, he has gone 33.1 innings. He has a 3.71 FIP, a 4.08 XFIP, and a 1.62 ERA. So he's gotten at least a little bit lucky. He has an almost 90% left on base rate. He's got a 220 BABIP against. Like, there's some good luck going his way. But a 3.71 FIP is nothing to sneeze at, right? It's like, you'll take some regression off of that 1.62 ERA and still be happy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think sort of regardless of format, I've been picking up Assad places and at least starting auctions on him, even if I don't think I'm going to end up with him. I've got him on three of my seven auto new teams. He's still a free agent in one of those leagues, and I'm looking at him there. Like, I would be out there looking at Assad because he's been really good.
Yeah, I looking at his whole body of work, and you know, I looked at him a little bit because he's come up for auction a couple times or in a couple different leagues, right? I'm skeptical of the strikeouts, meaning the strikeouts of the last two starts. Full body of work doesn't really show that as a skill compared to, say, Jordan Wicks. But there is something to be said about it's September, I'm in the playoffs, I need a starter, and ride that hot hand. I can't argue with that part of it. It's more of a, like, in the next 3 weeks move for me, and less of a in the next 3 weeks plus 2024 move. That's the way I would think about it. And that's valid. I'm not saying that's invalid. It's just not necessarily the way I'd want to. Just making sure you understand the difference between those two things. That's all.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Totally makes sense.
Right.
Let's turn our attention to the offensive side of things. Any bats that you've seen out there that you're like, oh, this is a guy people should be looking at?
Yeah, bats again are like a hard thing. A couple of the guys that I've been tracking are guys who have been really bad and might have been cut a little bit because they haven't performed up to expectation. So sitting right in the sort of high 70s, a little bit higher than I expected, but still dipping, is Amed Rosario, who you might be able to get for really cheap. And if you play him against lefties, it seems that he has remembered that he mashes lefties in LA. He is, I think, starting. Yeah, he's one of the things I noticed right when he got traded to LA is that the Dodgers started batting him fourth against lefties. Guy's been having a horrible season, hasn't shown any power, hasn't shown any of the skills that, you know, he has consistently had in his career up to this point. They're starting. They have Mookie Betts, they have Freddie Freeman, they're starting Amed Rosario batting fourth. And he's responded mostly. Like, he's been pretty interesting against lefties. I would take a look at him, especially if he's like just a complete cheap option. And again, it's sort of a hot hand thing. It's not necessarily, it's more aligned with the Javier Assad type, like, who are you thinking about for riding through the rest of the year versus who you're thinking about rest of the year plus playoffs. For our situation in middle infield, I'm not sure he's a great call because we only need a couple games of middle infield to be backfilled anyway. And it's really hopeful to say that he's facing a lefty on those days that we might need that fourth middle infielder to step in. But if you need an outfielder, or, you know, if you need more infield help than a fourth or fifth guy, he could be interesting. I mean, I think a lot of guys will look, regression to the mean works both directions, right? And if you're way underperforming, you might see some guys with really good Septembers that just were outliers up to this point.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the point about him hitting lefties brings up a good point about looking ahead in your matchups, right? We talked about how, like, this middle infield spot, we know exactly what days we think we're going to need a middle infielder. There might be other days that come up, but we know a couple days where we're probably going to need a middle infielder. We could go look at the Dodgers schedule and see what's going on with their probable opponents, right? And now there is some risk here because you never know when, you know, pitcher rotations move around, stuff like that. But like, if I look, we were thinking we're going to use Massey on Monday. The Dodgers will be facing the Padres on Monday, and the Padres starting pitcher is listed as TBD. They will be facing, they are off on Thursday. So he doesn't even help us with that Thursday.
Okay.
But if at some point in the next couple of days, it's announced that the Padres are starting a lefty on Monday, we probably should look at Ahmed Rosario and see if we can slot him in there.
Yeah, I hope they make that decision before Saturday, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you never know, right? But it is worth looking. Like, look at your schedules, figure out where you have gaps, and spend the time. Like, you can't do this all year. I don't know. Some people probably do. I can't do this all year. But in the playoffs, take time, figure out where you might need guys, and go get them to fill in just that spot where you need them.
It's worth it because these margins in the playoffs, like, baseball is a long season, and, you know, you want to ride these trends. But in the playoffs, like, it's extremely high variance, very quick. Things can change in a matter of a couple at bats. So,
yeah. So a bat that I like and is the other side of a platoon. You don't really want him facing lefties. We want him facing righties. Less exciting long term, but this guy, before I tell you his name, he is 54.1% rostered. He is a first baseman, which limits, you know, the value a little bit, but he's putting up 5.5 points per game and has a history of being even better than that. And he, like I said, just barely over half of leagues have him rostered. And that's Brandon Belt. I know he's 35 years old, and I know he wasn't very good last year, but he's been good this year. He's been solid.
He's been solid the whole time, right? It's not like...
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And so, you know, his last 10 games, he's put up 83.4 points, and that includes an 0-for-1 as a pinch hitter a couple days ago. He is sick right now, but it's a stomach virus. It doesn't sound like it's a COVID thing. It doesn't sound like so he's out. He's been out for a couple days, but he should be back in the lineup soon. And when he's back, like, he should be in your lineup against righties. Like, he's a good hitter. And so if you need help at first base, at util, if you play in a league with a corner infield spot, like, he's not an exciting keeper. I get that. He'll turn 36 right around opening day next year. I don't think he signed for multiple years in Toronto. So yeah, he'll be a free agent after this season. It's like, we don't know where he's playing. We don't know if he's playing. We don't know what to expect with him, but don't worry about that. You're not picking him up for next year. He's a guy to pick up and slot into your lineup because he can hit some home runs. He has decent average. He gets on base at a very high clip. So if you're in non-base leagues, even more reason to go pick him up. Points leagues, like, he is a useful guy, and there's really no good reason he's rostered in so few leagues.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's interesting about how when we try to be advanced in how we look at players, these guys that slip through the cracks because of age or because of history. And sometimes you have to accept the numbers that are right in front of you, you know? And one of the guys that I've had in League One sort of kicking around just because his numbers have warranted it is Mike Ford, who is he's hitting well. He's OPSing, you know, League One is a 4x4. He's OPSing over 800. He's hit 15 homers this year. His power is there. Sometimes you just have to accept the premise that 31-year-olds have a weird sort of rejuvenation seasons, and you can accept the premise. He is rostered in less than 1% of auto new leagues, which means it's basically me and one other guy rostering Mike Ford. And sometimes you just have to accept the premise, you know, like, sometimes it's not, it's like, production is production, and you have to just accept that, like, it may come from in a place that it's not necessarily repeatable. It's high variance on if he's going to show up or not. But he's a useful guy to have if you need, you know, a little bit of help there. Ryan O'Hearn has been another one of those guys for me who I think is rostered a little bit more than that, but extremely being played as a platoon hitter in Baltimore. He's rostered a little bit.
O'Hearn is at 50.32%.
Right, so 50%. So a little bit more than the 0.64% of Mike Ford, but, you know, 50%. Like, these guys are available, and you know, you look at O'Hearn in the same way you look at Mike Ford, same with LeBelt. These guys are in their 30s. They're on the wrong side of the sort of age curve. They have kind of like not the best on-base tool, but the power is there. And you don't know when the power is going to just completely evaporate. But Mike Ford, I had to run him out there yesterday because we had a day off. Detroit had a day off and Torkelson had to hit the bench. And Mike Ford, 2-for-4 with a homer. So I'm like, you know what? If I can catch enough lightning in a bottle with a player like that, as I'm coming down the stretch run, I'm in first place in League One and I'm trying to hold off a pretty good second place team, a team that's probably on paper a little bit better than my team. Like, you got to get lucky sometimes, and sometimes you just have to accept that you're rostering guys that are, for at least this moment, producing. And, you know, Mike Ford isn't a keeper. Ryan O'Hearn isn't a keeper, but they are guys that you can get for real cheap that might just help you out.
Yeah. Speaking of old guys who are worth taking a shot at, this is a different situation. This is not about trusting the stats so far because he's barely played, but Michael Brantley is back for Houston. And while the first five games have not been particularly great, although he does have a double and a home run in that stretch, he's been worth over 5.25 points each of the last 2 years, and there's really no reason to think he won't hit at some point. And so if you're looking for an outfield bat who can help out, like, it doesn't hurt to grab him. So yeah, any thoughts on Brantley?
Yeah, Brantley. I mean, old friend Brantley, who am I going to, I'm not going to argue with that. And outfield is nice. You know, O'Hearn has outfield. When you have guys that are first base only, that's like much harder to get them into a successful lineup like that you've already worked out over the course of the year. But Brantley is one of those guys too, where like not 100% sure he's completely done. So you could get him at a flyer and be pretty and have an interesting choice to make in January in an auto new league, I think.
Yeah. So after that, I think that, you know, there's a few more sort of like dart throwy types, and I'm gonna throw three names out here. One guy has third base eligibility, one first in outfield, one second, third in outfield. So they sort of help you all over the place. The third baseman is Carter Kieboom. He was a very popular prospect not that long ago. He has been very solid in 161 AAA plate appearances this year and got off to a fast start in MLB. He hit a home run, I think, in his first game. He had a home run in his first game, but he has already now hit three home runs in 10 games for the Nats. He isn't doing a lot else, and so I'm not sure like how confident I am he's actually good, but like there's some post-hype pedigree, and
it's another guy that you know he's going to get playing time. It's sort of going back to the TJ Antone conversation. The Nats traded their third baseman this year. They gave Kieboom some time, and now he's up, and they don't really have any reason not to play him. So they're going to run some guys out there, but you at least know, you have confidence that he will get that little, like, you know, in the batting order green number next to him. So
yeah. And so the other two guys, both of them under 3% rostered. One of them is a guy I've been sort of eyeing a little bit, although he's not a free agent in the league we are in together, the league that we co-manage. The other is a guy that you just brought to my attention earlier this episode, and I think is sort of interesting. The guy I've been eyeing is Spencer Horowitz for the Jays. He is 2.24% rostered. He put up a very big season in AAA, 7.51 points per game. That is a 143 WRC plus. Now he's come up and been hitting in very limited time, six games, 21 plate appearances, but he is hitting major league pitching so far. I think it's worth noting that at 25 years old, he's a little, you know, he should be mashing AAA, but it doesn't change the fact that he went out and did what he was supposed to do. And if he's going to get a shot to play regularly for the Jays, I don't know if he will, right? That's my big concern with him is like, I don't know if he's going to be in the lineup, but if he is, he's interesting and has a potential to have to build some future value. Lofton was not as good in AAA. He was still solid, but not as good, but
Nick Lofton, the
infield eligibility is really interesting. Yeah, Nick Lofton. Sorry, I guess I didn't say the name. Nick Lofton is the other guy. He's 2.88% rostered, second base, third base, and outfield eligible. He's playing with the Royals, and as of right now, it looks like the Royals intend to find ways to get him in the lineup.
Yeah.
we'll see. He's starting at first base today. Today is the 5th that we're recording. He started at third base yesterday. He started at second and then moved to first the day before that. His other start, he started at DH. Like, they're just finding places to put him. And again, so far he's hitting. It's a lot of BABIP in his hitting. And so, you know, we'll see if that maintains. But he's walking a lot and he's not striking out very much. He has an over 16% walk rate and an 8.3% strikeout rate. And, you know, AAA, he walked 9.5% of the time. He struck out only 13.1% of the time and he hit 14 home runs in 82 games. Right. It's like, you don't strike out, you walk a lot and you hit some home runs. Like, that's a recipe for success. And like I said, he is a dart throw, but he's sort of an interesting dart throw. And I don't know, maybe we should be starting an auction for him.
I think you can click that link that I just sent you for sure. Start that auction up. But he, with the rosters expanding, you know, a few days ago, Jason Dominguez and Austin Wells were hyped from the Yankees. And who's the Met? Mauricio got called for the Mets. All super successful right away. Very exciting. But Nick Lofton was in that group. He also got called up right away. He's also had a pretty nice start to his major league career with the expanded roster call-up. So I definitely want to keep an eye on him because exactly what you said. Like, he is...
Well, I clicked the button. We're auctioning him.
So. All right. The button has been pressed, everyone. We've made it. We've done it live. But yeah, so again, like, playing time is such a thing. Like, Carter Kieboom, when we're talking about him, Nick Lofton has this benefit that the Royals seem really interested if they're going to bring him up to make sure he plays for the next month. So you'll get an extended tryout. You'll have an idea of what you're looking at ahead of 2024. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So it's a list of guys who can help you now, maybe help you for the future. We talked a little bit about sort of how you prepare for this last month of the season. Covered a lot of ground, but Niv, thank you so much for joining and filling in for Pete. I think you did so admirably.
I hope so. I hope I did Pete well. That was really fun, Chad. Thanks so much.
Yeah, so thank you all for listening, and we'll be back with you next week.